Okay, Roxy, I heard what you said. Okay. Is now do you want to do a little talk on deep listening and Pauline Oliveros, who was a major influence on Frank, to the degree he could influence Frank? She did.
Yes, I think one of the main reasons she had such a big influence on Frank is because she concentrates on listening, but for real, because that's the first step to make music. And also, she expanded our concept of what is musical. She was a real pioneer in many ways in her way of thinking, her way of composing.
Yeah.
And she was making electronic music even before there were any devices to do that. She was using a very simple tape recorder, and she would change the speed, but she could have higher, lower, and then she didn't have like electronic devices for filtering.
Right.
So she would use the reflections of the sound on walls. She would make recordings of her bedroom. But she made very interesting things, although she didn't have very complex technologies, because she was listening. And she saw you can create sometimes a very complex sound process, and you don't need to do that with a machine, because sound is an acoustic effect. And sometimes when one wants to recreate something that can be done acoustically very easily, because sound is so complex,
mm-hmm.
it's very hard to do it in a technological way. There are some programs where you can program many aspects of sounds, and you want something to have the effect of the sound in this place. And it's so hard to create, it's better just to do it like in the acoustic instead of in the digital.
Right. So you're very impressed with the way she improvised with her low-budget technology she had.
Yes, she. I think Frank recognized very early that she was really important. And,
yeah.
And she's really a major figure of the contemporary music after the post-war contemporary music.
Yes.
Her work has been a big influence in many people. And I like that Frank recognized that so early.
Yeah.
And that he was listening to the music of Pauline Oliveros and also what she was saying. And he, for example, recognizing in that piece of the differential sound, the differential frequencies, that she was into something beyond just making music.
Beyond sense certainty, LaRouche's term, beyond sense certainty.
Yes, and Frank always complained the two major reasons people have such a bad musical taste is first that they don't have, and before it was really like that, the audience didn't have a real option of what they were listening. But Pauline told us she got actually her musical education by listening to a public radio station where they played every day 4 hours of contemporary music.
Yeah.
Do you remember the name?
KPFA in San Francisco.
I mean, that station is amazing because...
Well, you know what...
A lot of music
let
was
me explain.
Not aired at all.
Right, but here's what it was. It was a station created by a pacifist, Lou Hill, in about early 50s. And what he did, he got a station in San Francisco, one in L.A., one maybe down around Dallas, one in Washington, D.C., and one in New York. And the New York one, WBAI, some rich guy had a station. It was right in the middle of the dial. And then he sold it. He liked the free WBAI. So he sold the perfect billion-dollar positioning in the middle of the dial. So WBAI had this special position in New York, and they started around 1960, but KPFA in Berkeley started, you know, early 50s. The five stations, I think it's five, was called Pacifica. So you can Google Pacifica, the Pacifica Foundation, PACIFICA, and listen to the incredible archives. They taped everything from the 50s on, and because it was listener-sponsored and listeners controlled the content, they had dead air every morning to be filled, and that was the context for 4 hours of all kinds of music. It was a station that could do it. That's what she's talking about.
Amazing.
Listening to.
Yes, I think I'm going to go to the archives to see exactly what Pauline was listening to.
Yeah. And
she then went to develop amazing theories and music.
It's an interesting, the environment is bigger than the artist. So here's this great environment that radio made possible. It's like a Finnegan's Wake in radio terms. And that, as a student, as a consumer of that environment, made her an avant-garde, you know, brilliant composer, because she's an extension of that particular radio station.
Never said.
Never said. That's right. And it's being and it's all recorded. It's all being recorded. Now, I mentioned looking at the first video you put up of our conversation with her. I begin by talking about Gerd Stern. Gerd Stern created Pacifica. He became a friend of Lou Hill at the very beginning, and they had to sell transmitters. There was no FM or something. So you went around and sold a little receiving mechanism to somebody, and they would buy it, and they subscribed to this station. And he distributed those, the first couple of people, helping Lou Hill. So Gerd Stern, that's in the early 50s. He's in San Francisco for many years. Then he goes back to New York in the early 60s. Then he goes back out to San Francisco in right around the week that Kennedy got assassinated in 63, and that's when he put on his show at the Tape Center and met Pauline Oliveira. And so Gerd is an intricate part of this story, and Gerd's still alive today, and we've got a 24-hour interview with him, and I would like to talk to Pauline at some point about that era and what she remembers of Gerd, because Gerd goes around, he often goes to Germany. Art schools bring Gerd in because they were the first mixed-media artist of New York in the mid-60s, so he's part of art history now. So both he and Pauline, they're these fringe kids, meeting in San Francisco in 63, you know, 20-year-olds or whatever, and they're exploring sound, and here they are 50 years later, lecturing and being the eminent degrees and the authorities of the past. You know what I mean? The two of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Shaping also, in many ways, still
yeah.
the music, the contemporary music and other aspects, because the second thing Frank was also complaining about is that he said people had a very bad musical education.
Right.
So, and musical education starts with listening. And Pauline Oliveira went to develop this Here Comes Everybody theories about the importance of deep listening, not only for musicians, but for everybody.
Yeah.
And
for physical health reasons.
That's the superficial thing about deep listening. But there was just this discovery of the gravitational waves. Well, it was already discovered, or
yes,
but it was proven that they really exist, because two dark holes or black holes collide, and we can hear the sea tone that makes.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing that we can listen to such an event. And
to the big note.
Yes, that this is going to change physics in every way, and they say it's going to be such a revolution. We're going to teletransport, and really everything is going to change very drastically because of this discovery.
Right. Now,
sound is really becoming more and more important in many ways, and this is another aspect of things that you have been saying for a long time.
Yeah.
The importance of the expansion of our perception with technology. And you expand what McLuhan was saying. You're not just repeating
right. These
ideas.
Well, Zappa was all about deep listening. And both he and Pauline are talking about post-audio sound. They're bringing in synesthesia and what I would say is tactility. They both are working with tactile, audio tactile environments. So they're listening with not just the ears. And it would be, a college student could make a paper on the difference between them. She goes inner and into meditation, and Frank goes outer into newer, better technologies, both with the same goal of getting you to listen to your world and not be limited by just an ear listening. That's why Zappa said, this movie for your ears. He used other senses as the concept for his music. You know, this visible kinetic thing for your ears. So I don't know enough about Pauline's work, but I suspect she could learn a bit about media and the McLuhan sense from Zappa. Zappa's not here to learn from her, but I think Zappa already was able to do the meditative stuff. He had a picture taken of himself around 66, 67 in a meditative yoga position, you know, mocking the activity. And that was right when the Beatles were going with the Maharishi in India. So Zappa was not inclined to emphasize the inner mystic, though he did say he dropped his Catholicism when he was 18 when he heard and read about Zen. So Zen influenced him in his late teens, which is the Buddhist world of Pauline Oliveiro.
Yes, and in a way it reminds us of Cage, because McLuhan said we were going east, we were going inside.
Yeah.
And this type of development in art are really reflecting what is going on with the electric environment, that the West was going east.
East is going west.
What would you say about it?
Yeah, now I was just thinking, Frank used to always distinguish L.A. from San Francisco, different scenes. The hippie scene were not freaks. And I've joked with that with various Zappa critics and friends. But there's a Zappa, there is the L.A., San Francisco dialectic in the relationship of Pauline and Frank. She's L.A., she's San Francisco sensibility. She's into living sort of naturally. And she's plain. She's not dressing up fancy costumes unless she does it and I don't know of it, you know. Maybe she does theater. But her image is more the contemplative hesychast, hesychast, which is going inner. And Frank is the outer. Now, she's still alive and he isn't. So that might be a factor in their choices. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what I really like about Pauline, and I told her what I sort of found revolutionary, was the idea she gave me that everything is music, everything is vibration.
Right.
And even matter listens, like I was saying. Because everything is vibrating and sound shapes matter.
Is this something you got this year or years ago from her?
Years ago, just the idea that for me, that everything is vibration. And I really thought, like Tesla said, you can understand the universe with the vibration, and there was all these theories like in antiquity or like the Gurdjieff theories about the music. That there is a way of understanding the universe through vibration and music. I really believe there is something too important there that was very, very crucial, that we have to understand sound, somehow understand reality.
How old were you when you got this idea?
T1, 27, 19.
Oh, that's just a YouTube I brought up.
Well, he said that the age I was, I think.
What'd they say?
I don't know, 27, 19.
That might be where the part I'm looking for. But so what, but how old were you when you got that idea?
Yes, I was like 11 because the composer where I had my studio, Antonio Rosetti, he was into Gurdjieff and all these ideas, which are very complex. They get very, very complex.
Yeah.
And he will talk about these things, and I found that very fascinating.
Well, I'm looking
up. For me, it was like really an expansion of what I thought music was. I got the impression it goes beyond, but there's like a big secret there to discover, a big revelation.
Big secret. And then that gets that gets reinforced by Ion. He gives you a new level of understanding vibration.
Yes, and because of my admiration for all these mystics that could develop this wonderful abilities that I thought everybody should be able to activate all these spiritual gifts, like the bilocating or the uncorrupting.
Right.
And many, many things, speaking in tongues and all these wonderful capabilities they had. All that was replaced then by the music, because I didn't become a nun or a mystic.
Right. Well, I'm looking at the Lumpy Gravy. I want to play you something. Trying to see where that part would be.
That's one of the things that Ion has been saying since the beginning, that frequency is very important, and my understanding is we have this big effect from music, even emotional, because, as I said, it's a way of massaging your particles, your atoms. It goes really at that level with the vibration. Like it gets into your cells, and I have the impression Ion is saying there are like some frequencies we cannot perceive, but with the completion, these other frequencies that somehow shape things for our perfection, for our completion, are amplified, or there is some change, some mutation that because what I also find very amazing from Pauline is that he's saying we can hear at the quantum level.
Right.
It's a clear when everything is vibration that our particles bonding and vibrating. There is a hearing we are not aware of. Like, for example, I remember when there was a big earthquake in Mexico City, I remember there was a very low sound, and you can feel that vibration. It's more than hearing with your ears. It's
right.
It's like a feeling. And like that, we are listening to things that are out of our hearing range, but the frequencies are there.
Yeah.
And are hitting us and affecting us. And maybe we can feel, like in the case of an earthquake, the vibration, also with our feet, with our skin. So it's really not only the ear that is listening. It's, as you say, audio tactile.
Right. Well, in 1968, if you bought Lumpy Gravy, you're a teenager, you buy the album, this is what you would hear. At some point on the album, a voice says, "Everything in the universe is made of one element, which is a note, a single note. Atoms are really vibrations, you know, which are extensions of the big note. Everything's one note." So the idea that everything is vibrations, or the molecular matter levels vibration, is right there in Frank's idea. He put in an album called Lumpy Gravy in 1967, which gets released in 68. So that was the year you were born. You could have picked up on this, and then you found 11 years later a place doing it in the lab. I was trying to find the actual part. I can't find where it actually is on the album.
Yes, and I have mentioned before how matter is changing. For example, the case of water is very easy to see when you apply heat.
Say it again.
The structure of the molecules, the water. When you apply heat, the structure of the water changes so that it is transmutated from a state into another state, from liquid to vapor.
Right.
But then it can also be ice. And when we apply these other aspects to frequency, like he was talking a lot about magnetism. What was the other thing?
Frank?
Frequency magnetism. No, ion.
Oh, tuning fork, magnetism. The other thing?
He always had this, I think, like three aspects. The frequency, the magnetism.
Oh, yeah. And the positioning, the proximity, I haven't thought about that in a while. There's five of them. Polarity. Polarity.
Yes, these aspects that are in a way like the particles, like Frank Zappa would say, these innocent particles are there, being sculpted by these things, and bonding together, organizing themselves together in different ways and creating different elements or changing ourselves or who knows what's happening, and they are listening to these frequencies.
Right.
And they may be so subtle, we are not aware with our ears. But at that level, we are listening.
Right. Now, Zappa has, in the article he wrote for Life magazine, June 28th, 1968, the title is "The Oracle Has It All Psyched Out." So that's a reference to him putting on the fact that he can explain everything. He writes in the article, in the Abnuccio Imuka Electric Symphony Orchestra album, Lumpy Gravy, there's a section on side two where several unidentified characters discuss the origins of the universe. One of the characters explains the concept of the big note. Everything in the universe is composed basically of vibrations. Light is a vibration, sound is a vibration, atoms are composed of vibrations. And all these vibrations just might be harmonics of some incomprehensible fundamental cosmic tone. Now, when we talk to the evergreens, they say the basic cycle is 600 years. So it's interesting to keep that in mind. Now, it then says the big note is discussed again on Civilization Phase 3, came out in 1994. So I click on a different octave, and it gives the what's said on Civilization. Spider says, we are actually the same note, but, then John says, a different octave. Spider says, right, we are 4,928 octaves below the big note. Girl number three, are you trying to tell me that this whole universe revolves around one note? Spider, no, it doesn't revolve around it. That's what it is. It's one note. Spider says, everybody knows that lights are notes. Light is just a vibration of the note, too. Everything is. Girl number three says, that one note makes everything else so insignificant. John, what about negative light? Spider says, pigs use it for a tambourine, which is one of the reasons why their music is so hard to understand. That sounds like electronic composing, using negative light. Anyways, that's a tape that was made, I don't know if that was made in 67, because he made some more in the early 90s, including his daughter was on them. So this is either made later or it's a script that Frank got them to say that he wrote back in 67. But there it is. There's the big note. Now, yeah, I want to bring in an idea that relates to Pauline Oliveros, which is another aspect of this. So he says, the article where Frank talks about Pauline Oliveros is the LA Free Press, dated August 8th, JW's birthday.
Wow.
August 8th, 1969. And it goes, it's the August 8th to 14th issue. 8 and 14 is 22. So it's a good number. So So Frank starts off saying, because the interviewer says, I just heard your new album, Uncle Meat, and some of it sounds like some of the new Polish music, and some of it sounds like Zap Comics set to music. That's referring to R. Crumb's Zap Comics, who was very popular in 68-69. His collection of comics, underground comics, it was called Zap Comics, and he was getting a lot of attention in the cartoon world. And this interviewer, Paul Eberle, links Crumb and Zappa. All serious intent. I seriously intended to make that album sound exactly the way it sounds. And some people can't understand that you can seriously want to do something that's not serious. So Paul says, they think the two have to be done separately, like Spike Jones made some funny records and others that were just chiffon music. Zappa says, what we do and have from the very beginning is concept art. You know, like the real artistic merit of what we do does not necessarily exist on the disc itself. It's like different tones. I tried to explain this concept in a lecture I gave to a group of radio broadcasters. Do you know Pauline Oliveros' piece on the Argosy label? Which Pauline later corrected to be on the Odyssey label. There was no Argosy label, she says. Pauline's made a piece of music on which the sounds are generated this way. Two sounds, one below the audible range of hearing and one above the audible range of hearing. And from them are produced difference tones. Difference tones in quotes. Paul says, are they audible? Zappa says, yeah, they're quite audible, but they happen in between the two real things. So if you vary those two tones slightly, all this mass in between shifts. And so she's created a piece where the tones are varied slightly, and the whole thing is fed into a system of tape plays, and so when played back on top of one another, it makes a certain thickness, a bandwidth of non-existent madness. And so then he says, and some of the things that we do function on a related principle. Some of the ideas are below the level of human consciousness, and some of them are above the level of human consciousness. That sounds like ion. And in the middle is this peculiar byproduct, which is the manifestation of what those ideas are. Then he says to Paul, does that sound a little bit too abstruse for you? Paul, who's laughing, says, no, I was just laughing because I wondered how many of your listeners pick up on that. Zappa says, well, none of them do. And this peculiar monstrosity has been manufactured and distributed by an industrial mechanism, which gives it this other weird dimension, you know? In some of the albums we've put out, the content of the album is completely irrelevant to the concept of the album. The content of the album is completely irrelevant to the concept of the album. Do you follow me? Paul says, yes. Did the radio executives you lectured to understand that? He says, about 3 out of 100. So, I bring this up because McLuhan emphasized form over content. Here it's Frank mentioning form over content. Form is an idea, so he tends to be in the LaRouche quadrant there with the idea as the framework. Remember we were quoting Miles many shows ago where he was asking Frank to describe what is the idea in your music or behind things, and Frank didn't really spell it out. Left Barry Miles a bit frustrated. But the so in my chart, I've got Zappa beside McLuhan. That's why, one of the reasons. They're both talking about the content is not as significant as the form or the idea. So you have Frank, you know, miming McLuhan's ideas simply, a lot more simply than McLuhan, as well as working with the legacy of John Cage, who was very involved with McLuhan. So Zappa never visited McLuhan, but he was working with a lot of the same avenues. And I think Pauline is too. I'm pretty sure she's looked at McLuhan. She couldn't be influenced by Cage and not know about McLuhan, but we forgot to ask her that. So you see, she and Frank are influenced by the same thing. And Gerd Stern. Let me add this point.
I remember reading, just very short, because it has to do with that McLuhan saying the text of Cage were really relevant. And he said, not the music, but the ideas he had about sound and music.
That's what McLuhan said about Cage.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that Gerd Stern comes out to the Tape Center in November 63, and he puts on a mixed media show, and there was a visitor from Vancouver, British Columbia, an art gallery owner or manager, who said to Gerd at this performance in late 63, your ideas sound like Marshall McLuhan. Have you ever heard of him? And Gerd had heard of McLuhan, actually had read McLuhan's report from 1960 that he got through John Cage. So this guy invited Gerd to go up to Vancouver in January, February of 64. So Gerd goes up, he and his partner, Michael Callahan, and they meet McLuhan, and he and McLuhan become friends and correspond with each other. So right after, Pauline meets Gerd, Gerd meets McLuhan. See, so it's very close. They're rubbing up against each other in different scenes, which all are coming from the same avant-garde landscape or module. And you can see it in the way people pass one virus on to another. So we...
Yes, because another thing that I see they have in common is that they say it's very important to listen, because this is going to affect how you react, how you respond. And it's not only by making music, but in your actions, in your thinking, in your conversations.
Your whole being.
Your new music. Yeah. It's like you have to listen And they're expanding our conception of what is listening.
Right.
You listen with your whole body to the whole environment, not only to people or music, because you're interacting with and responding.
Your cells are communicating with other cells.
Unaware.
Right. Now,
yes,
in that article, the Oracle has it all psyched out, Frank talks about the young kids responding to the new rock, and they consider the music as bone conduction. They feel the music, the amplified music, in their bones. So they're not listening through their ears. And McLuhan says the same thing, that rock music is not meant to be listened to. It's meant, it presses up against you like foam rubber. It's the whole environment pressing up against your body. So you got McLuhan talking about foam rubber is in pop music, rock music, and Zappa saying it's bone conduction. So they're moving towards...
Yes, and for me, the fascinating thing about McLuhan and Joyce and what you say is finding these explanations of why things developed the way they did.
Yeah.
Why people start to have this need to go to concerts or to discos, clubs, to feel this very loud noise.
Yeah.
Like they need this massage. And there is a reason behind all this. It's not just like somebody had the idea to start playing music louder. And
no.
There is this technologies that allow us to record and amplify frequencies that may not be perceived. And that's how Paulino Oliveres came to be aware of the richness of the environment that we are not aware of, because she made a recording. And when she played back that recording, she realized there were a lot of noises and sounds she didn't remember listening when she was making the recording.
Ah.
So she realized that we are really not aware of what's really going on around us. There is so many things going on, and we're not aware of.
That's because the electric environment. Bucky Fuller said that by the first part of the 20th century, we moved into an invisible environment, and you could even say inaudible. So it was beyond the chemical body sensory norms. So we started living in invisible, well, actually a tactile interplay through most of the 20th century. So you hear in the music of the 50s, it's still the smooth radio effect. Now, Elvis and them start to come in and put some roughness in, which is caused by the tactile mosaic image of the TV. But 10 years later, you've had a population, you know, massaged by the tactile post-ear TV environment, and plus the mixed media of the global theater and the satellite environment in the 60s. So McLuhan said all the senses, all the old chemical body senses, had to start screaming. I call it Baroque spirals on my chart. They all had to go to high decibels to get attention in relation to the black hole of tactile mosaic, because tactility is not a sense. So all the senses rushed in to the black hole of the TV tactility, the black and white TV and then the colored TV of the mid-60s. And part of that was wailing, you know, loud rock music. Which, you know, if you played that for someone in 1910, they'd arrest you, you know. They wouldn't be able to take it because they hadn't been massaged the first half of the 20th century. Remember in the movie, maybe you never saw it, Back to the Future, where is it Michael J. Fox, his character starts playing, you know, shredding guitar music to the 50s dance hall, and they just think he's nuts. So... we've got the changes of the second half of the 20th century show the medium is the message. There's enough speed up and change in technological environments. So artists were forced to become like Zappa and Pauline. they were forced to start looking at the modes of shifting of figure ground environments. They had to go that way. So they were being dragged that way by the technological environments, and they had the personalities where they wanted to explore that. Whereas the very man that we began with in our first episode, with the interview with John Adams, a major American composer, he's not responding to the massage. He's trying to preserve an older aesthetic excellence based on Gutenberg values, you could say.
This is like LaRouche.
Yes.
He also thinks music ends with Brahms.
Right.
And then it's all noise, but this is the explanation you just said. Why does this become noise, music expands beyond notes and harmonies?
Yeah, right. William Irwin Thompson, in one of his books in the late 80s, early 90s, talks about how jazz in the 30s represented the new economy. They would take noise and make, you know, sweet music out of it. The noise of the information environment before World War II was going to be a big factor in the economy after World War II. So the jazz artists were actually economists showing the model of modulating noise as what was going to happen in the expanding wealth of the post-war, post-50s global abundance of media experiences, where all the media are stepping up. Look, you got kinetic space, you got hot rods or car races, Formula 500 zooming around, you know, trying to make kinetic space catch up to tactility, which is a no space. You've got rock music, you've got incredible painting styles, splashing paint. The eye is trying to keep up. And then you have movies, they're trying to keep up. Then you get into special effects. So all the senses are responding to the big note, which has been externalized in the global theater and the global membrane, and it's not a sound. It's like Zappa says, it has no content. You could even take Zappa's words, I don't think he meant this, but I could take his words, and he's saying the concept is more important than the auditory content of the Uncle Meat album. So what is he pointing to? He's pointing to the same thing McLuhan was pointing to, the tactile, non-sensory world that was massaging everybody. Non-sensory, it wasn't one sense, it was the interplay. So it just occurred to me, we want to relate this to the five bodies. So I think I've got something to read, which would be pretty interesting. I wanted to read it in the record, but I don't have to do it right this minute, but I'm going to do it. Would you like to talk some more about what you're saying?
Well, I also find it very interesting because the way you're explaining the evolution of music, I find it very, very interesting.
Well, glad,
but
very happy. Very happy that someone's
African
listening.
African-American went to develop, they were turned on by the electric environment.
Yeah.
And
they made the right.
Everybody tribal.
Yes.
And everybody went back to the blues and the jazz. And then jazz went to evolve into the free jazz, which is also like very chaotic, very loud.
Yeah.
Dissonant. They were looking for freedom of expression.
But not just that. That's the idea, and that can be translated into politics. They were looking to create tactile sounds. They were just screeching. And, you know, 50 years ago, that's not music. But here they were screeching, and people respond to it because they were trying to make sound equal tactility, and it can't be done. You can't make silence with sound.
Yes, and there is also a beauty inside all this chaos, and there is some type of...
Well, there's order. I'm spelling out the order. The TV... when you understand what the TV image is, you understand why all the other senses would become heightened. And why Ornette Coleman would start, playing what most people call extremely dissonant sounds. He was trying to express not just the tragedy of the black people in the United States. It wasn't just racial. It was aesthetically responding to the satellite, to Sputnik. that was McLuhan's important point.
And for example, Picasso said he could paint like the masters in El Prado, in the museum in Madrid. When he was a child, he could do amazing things.
Right.
And it took him all his life to be able to paint and draw like a child. And in jazz, in free jazz, many think he's just like about making noise. But this response and this type of music is so complex. I mean, most of the musicians that do that are actually very well trained.
Yeah.
Because to be able to do music in a situation that seems to be chaotic and everything is, it's another big aspect of what became so important during the 20th century is improvisation. Responding in the moment to the situation and faster and faster and faster.
Yeah, that's and part of William Merwin Thompson's. The economy had to respond, improvise. The corporation had to improvise their responses because the audiences, their markets, their clients and customers were changing so rapidly. So it became, you know, everybody was forced to be a jazz musician to improvise as the events unfolded every day. Now, there's one line in McLuhan's writings.
And another thing that you do, that you have been trained to yourself to do is to improvise your mental jazz very fast and talk about very complex subjects and topics like
rapidly.
You're doing now, doing this connecting and
disconnecting,
improvising.
Connecting and letting go. I just wanted to say, in McLuhan's Explorations, number 8, came out in 1957, volume 8, he has one question in the middle of the booklet. Is anybody listening? See, there was...
Yes, because that's another thing. We say we live in the age of communication.
Right.
But we should live in the age of deep listening. Like, there's
deep.
A lot of things going on, but are we listening?
Well,
are we responding correctly?
Well, so I always thought...
Really deep listening is very important.
Right, and I'm a genius of that. I'm well known for being a good listener, and I was able to do my radio shows for decades because I could listen and improvise on whatever paltry thing they said, whoever I was talking to. I could take the littlest fragment and compose something out of it, make rapid pattern recognition. So the kind of deep listening I do, I don't see Pauline doing that. She's listening as a monad, not a dyad, not in dialogue, unless she does this in lectures and that. You know, I'm not that familiar with all her work. So maybe she covers it all. But when you're playing an instrument, it's monadic. You know, you're playing to perform for some listener. But what I think is tactile is dialogue. I say the most important part of any artist's output is their interview. Whoever interviews them. How you perform in the interview.
Well, I think she's exploring more and more that because she works with Ione and she works
right.
a lot with pitch.
Yeah. Yeah, she probably is doing that.
She's doing more this type of Corbin, maybe more conventional react and responding conversation. But for me, conversation it's another branch of music. It really has the same aspects of playing. You have to listen and respond. And your response is the new music, like that's what Ion is saying.
Right.
We have to learn how to talk.
Well, I like the definition of responsibility, the ability to respond. Now,
because this is what Ion is expanding in this conversation. He says, we're listening even at the atomic level, quantum or cellular,
yeah,
or whatever, at many levels we are listening and responding physiologically, mentally. And Pauline Oliveres also thought that she says you have to deep listen in your dreams, in your imagination, in your thoughts, not only in the outer kingdom.
Right.
He doesn't use these words, but it's like you have to listen in all your three kingdoms.
Hey, you know what? Yeah,
let's
have a
better
just response, gave me an idea.
But wait.
Yeah.
This is the expansion ion is then adding, because the new music, your speech, is the key to manifestation.
Right. Now, you just gave me an idea. What Pauline, what she's trying to do with her deep listening, if she's analyzing dreams, is she's trying to hear parallel worlding. I don't know if she knows about it, but if she listened to Ion, she'd realize that she would change her image of dreaming and realize she's going to other worlds, and then start listening to that. Become aware that she's actually listening through her dreams, other worlds. So I think we have found a way to deepen her deep listening. It's getting deeper in this world. If she starts realizing listening to other worlds, then it becomes more surface again, and she can float through various non-constipated environments. But you can get real focus on listening in the physical, and of course she's including cellular and invisible, inaudible levels. But what about the fact you're listening to other worlds?
Of course, because as Ion is saying, the mystery landscape is becoming more and more visible, and many things that we might consider woo-woo are not. They're
right.
Just part of things as they are, but we could not explain them. And maybe this change in the physics, this revolution that is taking place, is bringing many things to manifest it. So we really need to start expanding also our concepts and be open to these new ideas, like we interact in parallel worlds, and that the dreaming is not only dreaming, and the importance of what you're saying to manifest, and many ideas that Ion is presenting. We had to really take them seriously and expand, because it's not only there for entertainment. Like we're talking about these weird things just for fun. No, it's really, I think, to be considered seriously.
Yes, it's a benefit to your sanity to notice these other dimensions. I kept thinking of talking about the swallowing up of everything by the electric extensions, the digital extensions, but I can't remember where I was going to go with that. So what I wanted to bring in was the five bodies aspect to this, because I don't know if I think Pauline is trying to hear the difference.